America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
Good Monday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. As always, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. I hope your weekend was good, and I hope you had some time. If you are of the fatherly persuasion, you had a time with your children, or if your father's still around, I hope you had a chance to talk to him and tell him how much you love him. Because it feels like we don't say that enough in this day and age, when it just seems like every day something else just comes across and makes you go, really? And we certainly had that again over the weekend at Talladega.
Listen, this was a bad weekend. This is a bad weekend for a lot of sports. You know, the PGA had a positive test, though the tournament went on.
Yeah.
Baseball closed down all their facilities. Basketball, there's a spike going on in the state where they're going to play, though maybe not close enough. We'll get into that. College football has a ton of positive tests going on. In the NFL, the doctor for the union is saying players stay the hell away from each other until training camp. And all that, in all honesty, kind of pales in comparison to what else has been going on in the world at the NASCAR race in Talladega, where a noose was found in the locker of Bubba Wallace, in Bubba Wallace's garage. I mean, this was a bad symbolic weekend, both physically and mostly physically, obviously with the COVID and all the positive tests. But boy, oh boy, I mean, a noose left in the locker of Bubba Wallace.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem real, which is the crazy part. Like, all the rest of that stuff, it is tolerable in the way that it had been so normal up until this point. We had been used to seeing various news about the leagues, their plans to return, spikes in cases, which are unfortunate because those are tied to very real lives in all of this. But that's something that we've been dealing with so much. And even this, I mean, if you watched any of the ESPYs last night, it was a show that was heavily steeped in all of the social issues that have plagued our society, in all of the movements that athletes have been such a part of, in lifting up their voices in support of these causes. And so all of that was still present in a way that had been for a while now. But this just stops you in your tracks. Like, there's something, and maybe it's wrong because it should all make you angry, but my immediate reaction to this, in a way that, like, I usually try and make not the case, was like real true anger.
I was stunned, because remember, what didn't shock me is outside of Talladega, and by the way, the race wasn't run.
Right. Race going to be run gonna today be run at 3 today. O'clock.
There were flags outside the stadium.
Confederate flag.
Confederate flag. I'm sorry. Yeah. Outside the stadium, there was a flyover of a Confederate flag. All that I expected.
Totally.
I absolutely expected people on the outside of the track to do that. But man, hearing a noose in a locker set, someone got in there, which they're going to find of just how crazy that was.
Junior, to your point, it's just such a visceral image of hate. You know what I mean? There's no other way to describe it. It is a visceral image of hatred and pure evil. And there's no way to mix the message. You know, like, for example, the flag. Oh, it's heritage, not hate.
Right.
You can cling to that rope if you want.
And people will.
That's a joke.
And they will.
But there's no getting around this one.
Yeah.
There's no way of parsing it, that someone decided to do something so despicable and stupid because they wanted to. Because they wanted to make someone else feel small. Because they wanted to make someone else feel less than human. And, you know, Ryan McGee and Marty Smith have done such a great job with this, but Marty had this incredibly long, passionate soundbite he used on radio and also on television yesterday where he said, I hope whoever did this, hope you feel ashamed. And the sad part is that person won't feel ashamed.
No. I thought the exact same thing when I heard him say it. Yeah. I said, Marty, they're not. This person will never feel ashamed
for what this person did. No. And that's the saddest part of this entire thing.
So NASCAR put out a statement late last night and they responded to this pretty swiftly and said, from them, late this afternoon, NASCAR was made aware that a noose was found in the garage stall of the 43 team. We are angry and outraged and cannot state strongly enough how seriously we take this heinous act. We've launched an immediate investigation and will do everything we can to identify the person or persons responsible and eliminate them from the sport. As we have stated unequivocally, there's no place for racism in NASCAR, and this act only strengthens our resolve to make the sport open and welcoming to all. Yeah.
So, I mean, first off, the idiot will get caught because he's an idiot and there are cameras everywhere.
Correct.
So they're going to get caught. And then where it goes from there, if he's someone in that.
And I would say it's also worth noting, so this was the first race that NASCAR was allowing fans back to, but the access was very limited on all of this, on all fronts. Ryan Smith, who is part of Marty and McGee, as you mentioned, that you can hear on ESPN Radio every weekend, talked about how NASCAR is smoking this guy out.
That was a very, very isolated incident. You know, because of the pandemic, there's an extremely limited number of people allowed in that garage. It's just essential personnel. It's people that work on race teams. It's track security and track employees, and that's really kind of it. There's no fans. There's no hot passes. None of that stuff is go tours in the garage like they normally are. And so NASCAR's smoking this guy out, this man or whoever it is, and that's what's happening here because they could have sat on this thing. There were only a couple of people that knew about it. Bubba Wallace didn't know about it until he was told about it. And so what's happening is that they're sending a message, and they're starting the process of whoever it was, they're letting them know they can't hide, and they're closing the ranks on this person.
Listen, if there's one positive out of this, it happened in this situation. So they will. This guy's going to get found out.
Very easily.
We don't know. This person is going to get found out one way or the other because of what Ryan McGee was just talking about. There are so many cameras out there, and NASCAR, they're taking this thing, the whole thing with the Confederate flag, they're taking it very seriously, and they're taking this thing very seriously. It wouldn't surprise me by the end of the day they didn't know who this guy was.
Oh, I'd be shocked if it was the other way on all of this. As far as Bubba Wallace, he also put out a statement last night with his response. Today's despicable act of racism and hatred leaves me incredibly saddened and serves as a painful reminder of how much further we have to go as a society and how persistent we must be in our fight against racism. Over the last several weeks, I've been overwhelmed by the support from people across the NASCAR industry, including other drivers and team members in the garage. Together, our sport has made commitment to driving real change and champion a community that is accepting and welcoming of everyone. Nothing is more important, and we will not be deterred by that reprehensible actions of those who seek to spread hate. As my mother told me today, quote, they're just trying to scare you. This will not break me. I will not give in, nor will I back down. I will continue to proudly stand for what I believe in. So, Bubba Wallace coming out and unequivocally saying that this will not stop and this will not deter him. And the first group of people I thought he mentioned was the support from other drivers.
Right.
I tell you what, if I'm a driver in this sport and I don't know the dynamic as well as, you know, team sports where it's so very clearly a teammate, but we hear all that time that term, the fraternity.
Yeah.
Someone in your fraternity was attacked.
Yes.
Like that's right. What this was.
Rally around.
Like right. One of your, and that was all I could keep coming back to. And I was angry, man.
Yeah.
Like it just, cause that thought, like one of your teammates was attacked. And the only thing I could think of, and I always try and be so measured in response because especially when you play football and you're big, everyone assumes your response is always going to be brutish and it's always going to be violence and it's always going to be the most like basis carnal thing that you can muster. And so I always try and be pretty measured and think about it and respond reasonably. And the only thing I could come back to with this is someone needs their ass kicked.
Yeah.
Like that was straight up what it was. Like the thought of someone doing that to a teammate, to the person, like a person I love in the sport like that is such a guttural response that I couldn't tolerate. And so if you're a driver out there who wasn't sure about this before, and as all the flag debate came up around the Confederate flag, if it wasn't crystal for you before, if racism was still something that kind of existed in the abstract and you hadn't yet fully digested it or hadn't been reckoned with that, let this crystallize the damn thing. I encourage you to make it very real and very personal right now, because it doesn't get much more personal than this. And that's not to say the police brutality and all those other things. They're different symptoms of the same sickness.
Yes.
But this is such a visceral image. This is what, you know what? This is kind of like the Confederate flag. It's the easy racism to spot. Right. So let it be the gateway to the understanding the rest of it for you. Let this make what Bubba's been telling you about in all those other instances and what all these other athletes have been telling you about feel very freaking real.
Like I said, there's no way to parse it. There's no way to think of anything else but what it is and what it stands for. And Bubba has said he's felt like all the other drivers have had his back on more than one occasion. It would certainly be great if we heard a lot from a lot of those drivers speaking up. So it's not just Bubba speaking up, but everybody else speaking up with him.
I think they'd be so stunned if they find out it's someone from another team. I think the thought is it's going to be someone. Whenever you do these events in pro sports and you go to the different cities, they have the local people working at the tracks or at the stadiums or at the arenas. And I have a feeling they believe it's going to be someone like that, because if it's someone on a team, I mean, they're obviously going to be gone. But then you're talking about invasion of a locker room type thing, which would, to your point, Mike, would make me lose my friggin' mind.
It would be exponentially worse.
It really would. And then it gets down, and we'll get into the law part of it. Is it hate crime in Alabama? You know, different states have different things of where it would go for this person.
Yeah. I have to believe that this person will be found out sooner rather than later because of the situation in which it was happening. All right, coming up, the race itself as Talladega was postponed today due to rain. So what happens when they get to the track this afternoon? I think it's going to run at 3:00. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dentist to actually believe you?
And you're flossing every day?
Absolutely.
Great. And you're cutting down on your sweets?
Of course.
Wonderful. Then I don't even need to look in there.
Great. See you in 6 months.
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
All right, Golic and Wingo with you here on a Monday morning. ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80. As always, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So in wake of what we now know happened, where Bubba Wallace was made aware, he never saw it, which was great. He was made aware that that a noose was found in his area of his car, number 43 car, at Talladega on Sunday. It's interesting now because of what happened with the weather yesterday. The rain and the thunderstorms came through. The track was soaked.
Remember, there were 5,000 people in the stadium. Yeah. This was the first time.
First time we've had some fans back, and some of them, because they felt so inclined outside the track, were waving the stars and bars.
Well, you knew that was
Ryan McGee said, good for you. You know, good for you.
Yeah.
That's your win. Take it.
You're
solid.
Your gold star is in the mail.
Congratulations. Fist
well done. Participation trophy for you guys. Great. But it's interesting because the race was never run, and now we know this, and now the race can be run this afternoon. Right. So NASCAR has another unbelievable opportunity to show unity, to show support for Bubba, and to make a defining statement with how they present what's going to happen today.
Well, I think by the time the race comes, they could find out who this is because you couldn't have more isolation of groups in the garage. I mean, just as we heard Ryan McGee say, was it Ryan or Marty? I forget which one said, normally at a NASCAR race, it's packed in there with tours and everything. Now nobody's allowed in each other's area. So, and there's cameras everywhere.
Ryan put it, there's literal red tape on the ground.
Yeah. So they're going to find this person. But I think today, you know, so there's that part of it. I think today there are people still be outside the stadium flying the Confederate flag. I don't know if we'll have another flyover on with attached to a plane or not, but it would not shock me if they know by today. And I think they'll go, and weather permitting, they'll run the race And every driver is backing Bubba Wallace. And to your point, Mike, and I agree, you have now made it personal to all these other drivers as well, to where they're really ticked off on this thing. But, you know, here's hoping that the race goes on, the weather is good, and the race goes on smooth, and they find this idiot.
Support and showcase Bubba Wallace today. Like, that I thought about this, and I go, if you weren't inclined to watch the race before, and if maybe you were a fan that was coming to NASCAR because, and we had seen this after the announcement that they were getting rid of the Confederate flag at events, a bunch of people saying, I'm much more inclined to look now because I know this symbol's not going to be there. If you were maybe on the fence or had other things going on for Father's Day yesterday, might be time to watch and support the guy who's standing up in the face of this and saying, no, you're not going to stop me.
That's exactly right. And, you know, when the whole banning of the stars and bars and the Confederate flag came through, Ryan McGee put together a passionate article on ESPN.com, which was wonderful. And he also spoke so clearly and eloquently about it. And, you know, basically saying, we're not standing for this anymore. We won't see that flag. I can point you to a museum, but we're not going to have it here. And Ryan, one more time, basically put it best what happened yesterday and what it was.
Whoever this person was or people were that put that noose in a garage stall, and whoever decided to fly that Confederate flag over Talladega Speedway today, they're on the wrong side of history, and they're scared, and this is the last grope of the morons. And, eventually, listen, you tell a rebel he can't do something, he or she can't do something, what are they going to do? They're going to rebel. And that's what NASCAR is bracing for. That's what they know they're going to have to deal with. And but they also know that TikTok, the time's up for those folks. It's just a question of when.
Yeah, and they'll keep trying. They'll keep doing that, whatever that's going to be.
And they will be shouted down.
They will. NASCAR driver Michael McDowell, who actually starts behind Bubba Wallace today, tweeted out, God help us. The level of evil it takes to do something like this is disgusting. This is enraging and heartbreaking all at the same time. Just something we thought, Mike, as you mentioned earlier, that a teammate, you know, or someone within that sport, the brotherhood of that sport, would say. And then that leads to a question. What else can be done? You know, you have Mississippi, basically the SEC telling Mississippi, you're not getting any championship games as long as that Confederate flag is flying within your state flag, right? I mean, so they're talking about doing that. Can NASCAR will they do something at Talladega? I don't know if you can do a lot about people. You say you can't have the Confederate flag inside the stadium. Well, these people are outside the stadium. There was a noose left in a locker. I don't know if it turns out to be a local person there who's hired and works the track. People are saying, should NASCAR do something to Talladega? There's two races there a year. Do you take a race away? I don't know where you go with all of that.
I think you look at past precedent, though, and Ole Miss is certainly one to bring up. The NBA taking the All-Star game from North Carolina a couple years ago after things surrounding what was, you know, dubbed the bathroom bill. Right. But obviously, you knew the things that went into that issue. And so could that send a message? Because I've been thinking about, in another sense, and everything going on with COVID-19 right now, and what we heard from a lot of the golfers over this weekend at the Heritage Tournament was that people in Hilton Head are not taking this pandemic seriously.
Justin Thomas said it was a zoo outside.
And with that, was it Nick Watney who tested?
Nick Watney
tested positive, and he left after the first round and wanted to let everybody know, you know, obviously I tested positive, so anybody that was around, you know, to get tested. But yeah, they said it was crazy there.
They said it was crazy. And so I thought to myself, if you are a league right now and you've got a surrounding area that is seeing a spike in cases like that, and you're seeing it's because that there could be in large part a disregard for the, you know, standards that have been set forth by local health officials. If you were that league, could you send a message by saying, we're not going to put our athletes in potentially harm's way. We don't need to come and play this event in your area if this is what's going on around it, and send that kind of message there. Could something similarly be done here where it says, we're not going to put our drivers in an area that is hostile towards them, makes them feel unwelcome, or puts them in harm's way? We will run our race elsewhere right now.
Well, it's interesting because Talladega's second race is part of NASCAR's playoffs on October 4th. Right. So if they feel so inclined, that would be the opportunity to do it.
I don't think they will, but I wonder if people will bring that up or talk about that. I'd like to, you know, obviously, you know, Marty Smith and Ryan McGee, I'm sure we'll be talking right. about things like this and others involved in NASCAR, but we have seen it relative in other sports, and will they take action in other places?
And again, you bet a large amount of money that sooner rather than later, we'll find out who this moron was.
Yeah. Without that.
And the hammer of justice on every level from the league, legal, will come down swiftly and hard on that individual.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Golic and Wingo with you on a Monday morning, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So, for all the sports hoping to return, finding a way to return, or beginning to get set to try and play in the middle of the pandemic, it was kind of a rough weekend. Because, as you said, Nick Watney tested positive on the PGA Tour, although I thought the tour did a really good job handling that situation. We've seen a bunch of colleges have several students testing positive in a bunch of places as those athletes are working out. We have all those issues. And then we have the NBA getting closer and closer to the resumption of play in the bubble/campus/resort area atmosphere in Florida. In Disney World. And all of this is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, because Florida, as a state, added 4,049 new cases Saturday, which broke the previous single day record of 3,822, which was set Friday for new cases in the coronavirus. In all, the state has set records for single day cases in 7 of the past 10 days and is approaching almost 94,000 infections, becoming a national hotspot along with Texas and Arizona, states that are seeing surging numbers and states that were the first to sort of reopen. As you might imagine, this is catching the eye of a lot of people in the NBA who are getting set to descend on Florida in Orlando. Now, we should point out that in Central Florida, where they will be in Orlando, the cases are not nearly as high in Orange County or in Osceola County as they are in Dade County, which is in Southern Florida.
Yeah, it's a lot. So the bulk of the cases, almost 25,000 cases, are in Miami-Dade County. South Florida continues to get hit really hard in all of this, but it is important to differentiate, especially in a state as big as Florida, and the way this is going to proceed, that area that we're talking about for the NBA is not the one that's necessarily the hotbed right now.
And you look at Orange County and Osceola County as compared to the 25,000. Orange County, 4,500 cases. Osceola County has reported 1,000 cases, so a lot less. Michelle Roberts, who runs the players union, her quote, can't say I'm surprised given the state's approach to reopening. We know there's a few hotbeds out there, Florida, Arizona, Texas, where you're seeing a resurgence. And here's the thing, because I know in those states there are people saying, well, wait a minute, it's only in certain areas and you have to look more at hospitalizations or deaths. And I get all that from the larger point, but not for sports.
Yeah.
A positive test is all that's needed in sports to possibly stop sports. So, from the country view and the reopening, I understand what you're saying about hospitalizations and deaths, but all you need is a positive test by an athlete. It could be asymptomatic. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That athlete is gone in any sport for 10 days to 2 weeks. So that's what we're talking about here. And if you get multiple players on a team, that's what we're talking about. Is it going to shut back down? Because as they've talked about in going to Walt Disney World, while the players will be tested, all the workers who will not be living on site from the restaurants and the hotels and all the people that will be there working.
All the unionized workers, which is
they are not going to be tested. They're going to be living at their homes and then driving onto property. They're not going to be tested like the NBA is going to test their players. So there is that concern there.
Yeah. By the way, the NBA Players Association held a virtual town hall with players this week and addressed the concerns about the Florida cases. And one of the things that was brought up was like, look, we're in this restrictive bubble. bubble, and this is what we are, but the people that are interacting with us aren't. And that's going to be the bigger issue.
Now, and I know in the safety protocol that got sent out to the teams, there are a lot of precautions taken to limiting any of that involvement. You know, their hotel rooms would only be cleaned once a week, and it would be a person wearing full protective equipment in those situations. Yeah. For the people they might interact with more often, think the bus drivers. The NBA is talking about potentially hiring out its own bus drivers for a lot of these situations so that whoever would be interacting with the team would be quarantined in the bubble with them, or at the very least would be subject to the same testing, because that's something that the unionized employees won't be subject to, is the same testing that NBA players are.
And here's the thing. We're seeing it in college on a grander scale because more people are coming in of athletes testing positive. You have 37 people. I believe it's 37 per team.
Yeah, the traveling group is 37.
A little over 1,100 people will descend upon Orlando in a matter of a couple days, I think, in the first week of July. You know, out of some of that, there's going to test positive, right? Whether it's players, support staff, coaches, somebody, yeah. And they're immediately going to be isolated, and then you're doing the contact tracing of, okay, who are they around? Because they're going to be coming in on private planes. I know that. So right out of the gate, it will be interesting on who tests positive from player to coach to support staff, and right out of the gate will be isolated from everybody else.
You have to assume there's going to be positive.
You do, don't you?
In any situation, that's why
it's happening in college, with something we'll get to a little later, because it's the first test they're taking after coming in from all around the country,
right.
Which is the same thing here we're talking about with the NBA players.
So this is a massive undertaking that the NBA has sort of put under themselves to get this thing back and going in this bubble environment in Disney World with all the hotels, with all the teams playing. And Brian Windhorst, again, one of the coolest names ever for a podcast, the Hoop Collective. I just love it. Basically said, there's been so much put into this that you're going to hear that magic phrase, this is too big to fail.
The reason this is going forward is because the league shifted from the idea that they couldn't play with players with any coronavirus to we can't continue to play if we have players who are positive. And here's how I'm going to term it. It's too big to fail. It's too much money, and it's too big to fail. Now, I say that sitting here on the night of June 21st. We may get to July 15th, and we may have guys testing positive or five guys on a team testing positive or what have you, and there is a tipping point. We don't know. I'm not saying that's not going to happen, Nick, but my feel from talking to people in the league is that is not the way that they think it's going to go.
Well, of course they don't think it's going to go that way. I mean, listen, you prepare for contingency plans. I get it. You're putting a plan in play to work, not to fail. So you want it to work, but he used the phrase in there that I'll use more importantly than too big to fail. What's the tipping point?
Yeah.
Because we know there are going to be positive tests. So what's the tipping point? When will it be? Okay, we're going to try everything we can to make sure we do this thing. But at some point, you're going to have to say, this is too much. I don't know what that number is. And anytime we try and ask anybody, I know it's very difficult to give an exact number. If X amount of our 37 test positive, we're going to have to shut that team down. I know it's tough to do. But to me, that line is more important than too big to fail. It's what's the tipping point.
And you wonder if that will be regulated because this is a professional league, because we've seen at various colleges, we've seen different numbers of testing triggering different responses at schools. Certain schools have shut down their programs for the summer for the time being in order to try and preserve that going forward, while others with comparable amounts of positive tests have gone forward and gone by the protocol that they had set forward for the NBA, because that's going to start tomorrow. So the NBA, per their agreement so far, is scheduled to start testing players the first round tomorrow on June 23rd. And so that's the thing that you were talking about, is we're going to see a bunch of positive tests out of this first one. That's the expected part. And like everyone's talked about, that means what they're doing is working. They're catching this at the beginning. They're identifying people going into this so that when people start to get to Orlando and get to Disney, they're able to properly assess the situation. There have been a number of epidemiologists who have come, you know, talked on ESPN and referenced in other places that right now, the way the NBA's got this set up, they're doing the most they possibly can. That doesn't mean you can do everything.
Yeah.
That's that, and that's the place we got to get to, because what's the tipping point is going to be the question for the players who are already some battling the idea of not going here for fear of safety reasons.
And by Wednesday, they have to make that decision, June 24th. Yes.
They have to make that decision, the players, to declare whether or not they're going to come. And so you've got some wrestling with the social justice portion of this, with their safety as it pertains to their potential free agency and the future of their career, with the safety surrounding the coronavirus and being separated with their families. So you've had guys balancing all of this, but I think I keep coming back to Brian Windhorst is between the meat of the bell curve and NBA players wanting and needing to be out there for financial reasons, for their future reasons, and for a larger understanding of what could happen to the sport should this season not happen, and the financial ramifications of the owners potentially being able to blow up this CBA, what could happen to the future of the sport, and a lot of that. There is a lot at stake, and I think it's just a matter of everyone kind of calmly communicating in this situation. Here's what we can expect as we start to come back. So when these rash of positive tests start popping up after we start testing tomorrow, people aren't caught off guard by this, which I hopefully at this point everyone's been made aware of to where they shouldn't be.
Look, there's a couple of things that need to be sort of understood here, because any sport that involves contacting another human being, for example, like NASCAR, you can be in your car and you really aren't contacting. Golf, you can play and really be away from everybody except when you're standing close to someone on the tee box. In any sport where there's physical contact, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's soccer, there's no way to guarantee their safety against getting the virus 100%. You are then going to sort of weigh it, okay, what are we willing to risk as an organization and as players in said sports against the cost of not playing? And that's the for every sport where you are not isolated by yourself and not touching another person, that's going to be the thought process going forward for every one of these things. We cannot safely guarantee that you won't get it 100%. That's something we can't give. So what are we willing to risk either as an organization or as an individual to play the sport against the risk of not playing them economically, because it will be catastrophic?
And like, players are allowed to think about that. Like, I understand that health and safety should come first in all of this. If you feel you have a moral obligation to a cause that's bigger than you or any one league, that's all understandable. But I also won't fault players who, the players that are not the high profile stars that have already made life altering money, I can't falter them for saying, well, I'm also very dependent on the potential income of not only this season, but the prospect of next season, my competitive desires. It's one of the prongs in this that deserves a place at the table for guys that are in a different position than others.
I completely agree. It's about thinking forward to the CBA possibly being ripped up, to free agency being what, 2 days, the draft is October 16th, free agency starting October 18th.
Yep.
And I don't think there's any doubt the union, the head of the union, wants this to happen so that CBA doesn't get ripped up and they're starting from scratch again. So I do believe it's all going to go forward. But again, I'll say, you know, what is the tipping point? So I think they're, again, players have till June 24th to decide if they're going to report first week in July. They fly down there. We're trying to get baseball to even agree to a deal at this point.
Good luck.
Are we getting any closer there as the players were supposed to have a vote in baseball last night to decide if they were going to take the 60 games that the, that, because again, the league proposed 60 games. The union came back with 70. The league didn't even respond to that. They said there will be no counter proposal. It will be 60 games. And they tried to throw in now a couple of more things for the players. Hey, we won't expand the playoffs in 2021. You don't have to have the universal DH in 2021. Trying to throw out some olive branches, as you put it before the show, Mike, to try and make it more palatable. And now the players were supposed to vote last night. Now they're delaying their vote to see before they finally come together and to see if decide if they're going to take these 60 games or not.
Yeah, and there are some that think that they're just waiting for Rob Manfred to sort of unilaterally impose what he's going to when it comes to the amount of games in here to try and preserve. I think I heard our own Pedro Gomez bring up the idea of doing that to preserve the right to file a grievance, which could be a grievance for, I believe, up to $1 billion in all this.
Yeah.
And we said this right away, the reaction from Major League Baseball side to the idea of a grievance being a part of what happens going forward was really hesitant, because it seems like they knew the players had a case.
Yeah.
Like, Like, you wouldn't be bringing that up if that document you had in March we've heard so much about wasn't so vague and you didn't think the players might have had a case at coming and grabbing a bunch of that money.
And all of this is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So that's the money part of it they still haven't worked out.
Right.
And then, oh, by the way, baseball got slapped in the face, too, with the pandemic over the weekend, as all Major League Baseball training camps have temporarily closed after multiple teams reported positive tests Friday, a source confirmed to ESPN. According to USA Today, there were a total of 40 positive tests among players and staff. So, again, understand where baseball finds itself. They are basically the last sport to try and figure this thing out because of the money. They haven't even gotten to the other part of it, which is the reason everything was shut down to begin with, which would be the pandemic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So all the facilities are closed right now, and it's a little different than the NBA because the NBA is all going to one place with over 1,000 people being tested a lot. Now it's up to each individual team at their facility to do their testing amongst themselves. Oh, by the way, before they fly, you know, to other cities and play games. So, but they got to get this deal done first. And it's what seemed odd to me is I didn't realize when Rob Manfred and Tony Clark met and Rob Manfred said 60 games, nothing came out of that that sounded like, remember Rob Manfred said it sounded like
the framework,
the
beginning of a framework of a possibility.
It sounds like he meant, dudes, it's 60, take it or leave it. Yeah. Because the union actually comes back to negotiate and they drop from 89 games all the way to 70 games saying, okay, we're going to give up hundreds of millions of dollars a year, come down to 70 games. Both sides can't file a grievance. And Rob Manfred was like, No. I guess you didn't understand me. 60 is as high as we're going. It's like, wait a minute. I thought there was a negotiation. I thought maybe it got to go to 65. But now baseball, the league is saying, no. It was 60. That's all we're playing.
So when and where is 60?
Yeah. Right?
Well, that's when and where.
And oh, by the way, please don't file a grievance against us. And if I'm the union, I'm going to hell with that.
Yeah. Well, it was still the commissioner negotiating instead of coming in and saying, because remember, we always talk about 48. That's as low as they can go on the games that the commissioner and the league can impose on the players. They can go higher. So he could have very well come into that situation and said, all right, you will play 60 games, show up here and there, bada bing, bada boom. But he started the negotiations again. This is all continued in that tenor, so here we are.
Listen, so there are two things they still got to deal with, right? They got to get a deal, and then they got to worry about the player safety and health issues. On the get a deal side, Jesse Rogers, our Major League Baseball reporter. Shocker, we're running out of time here.
It's pretty grim no matter what happens because the players feel like the calendar is shrinking on them due to the league dragging their feet in their estimation. And that means playing 60, 65, maybe 55 games. It's something they never wanted to do. Or even a lot of fans aren't going to be interested necessarily in the World Series winner of a 50 or 60 game season. So it's grim no matter what happens, but there's still some hope, but not a lot of optimism that it's going to be great baseball over the next few months, because usually it takes a couple months for teams to really find their groove. So I still think, I don't know, 50.5% chance that they'll play, but you never know. Again, this thing changes daily.
So in basketball, we're going to a state where there's a spike in the coronavirus. In baseball, they still can't work out a deal. And oh, by the way, every facility has closed down. And in the NFL, you have the union doctor telling players, stop working out together on your own, which is what players do in the offseason. Stop doing it until you're all together in camp where we can test everybody. And, I guess is there slight good news? I guess this has to be slight good news, right, for Dallas Cowboy fans? Dak Prescott, for all intent and purposes, even if he doesn't have a long-term deal, is going to camp. I think everybody thought that anyway. The word is he's going to sign his franchise tag today, which is a little over $31 million, which does mean they have until July 15th to work out a long-term deal. If not, that's what he plays on. But it also means he has signed the contract, meaning he could still hold out if he wanted to. I don't know why he would. He wouldn't sign the deal if he was going to hold out. None of us thought he was going to hold out anyway. So you know you'll have Dak Prescott as your quarterback this year for the Cowboys.
Good, nice temporary win that you backed yourself into. I am so happy to see the Cowboys bad business on this one, finally backing them into a corner, because that's where they sit on this. Dak Prescott is going to make a bleep ton of money by his standards over the course of this season. And basically, short of winning the Super Bowl this year, the Cowboys now find themselves at a big time crossroads.
Listen, and the reason is because of what the cap may be next year and what they would have to pay him based on the language. Because if they don't get a long-term deal done, next year it's, what, 120% of last year's salary.
Next year he could his franchise tag would be over $37 million.
$37 million. And we all expect for the first time in the salary cap era of the NFL for that cap to come down.
I think it's at, what, $192 million?
Almost $200 million.
Almost $200 million, but a lot of people think because of what's going on and the revenue that they're not going to get, it is going to come down. But his number won't change.
No.
Because it's going to be set. It's correct. A percentage of what he's making this year, so it would be over 37 mil. So they got to get a deal done.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with whether or not with the revenue goes down next year, because it's based on what he made this year and it's 120% of that.
Yeah.
So that's why now the Cowboys are backed. You said it, Junior. They have reverse engineered this thing almost to perfection, and not by plan. It just sort of happenstance. But now there's no getting around the fact that they've got to have a long-term contract with Dak.
Yep. Adam Schefter was on with SVP last night and talked about why Dak is actually sitting pretty on the tag.
The stakes on the poker game between the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott just got higher, because once he does sign that, then the Dallas Cowboys owe him the $31.4 million for this season. And if they can't get a long-term deal done by July 15th and they have to franchise him again, guess what that number is going to be? 37.7. And if they can't get a deal done after that, it's 144% of the salary from the previous year, $54.4 million. So to me, when Dak Prescott signs, yes, he gives up his options for this year. Yes, he has to be there. But to me, he's got long-term leverage, because the Dallas Cowboys can't afford to lose Dak Prescott, and they can't have him count against their cap at the numbers he's currently slated to make each of the next couple of years.
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Shell. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30. I just wanted to hear Adam say those ridiculous numbers.
Yeah.
But it's a show. Unless Dak Prescott really wants to be a Cowboy for life and long term, there is no incentive for him to sign anything before July 15th.
No, absolutely not. And the Cowboys have no chance. Listen. It's all sort of fallen their way, right? When they got CeeDee Lamb, and then they got the defender out of Alabama, Diggs, the safety of the cornerback in the second round when he's supposed to be a first round talent. It's all just sort of worked out. Well, now they got to work this part out.
Always go when you can use a name as a verb. He's just Kirk Cousined him.
Yes, exactly right. As Kirk told me on the schedule release show, I told Dak that the cap can be your friend. Tag can be your friend. Uh-huh. It's being very friendly right now. Coming up, and then there's college football, and the two teams that played in the national title game are handling the pandemic in very different ways. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo.